A man born in Canada by the name of Pierre Paul Thomas in 1945. And when he was born, he was almost completely blind at birth. He had three different eye defects. He had congenital nystagmus. Nystagmus is involuntary side-to-side twitching of the eyes. He had damaged optic nerves, and he had cataracts. And at that time, there was nothing they could do. In 2011, when he was 66 years old, he fell down a flight of steps and broke several bones and broke several facial bones as well, and those around his eyes. During the recovery process, he met a doctor, a surgeon by the name of Lucy Lessard, who asked Thomas if he wanted his eyes fixed. And he said, okay. And two surgeries later, he could see. He said for the first time he could see colors, he could see distinct shapes. He says, like I'm a child all over again. There's about 10 million people in America every year who are, there are about 10 million Americans who are blind or significantly visually impaired. About 1.3 million are legally blind. About 5.5 million seniors are blind or visually impaired. Blindness is at the least a great inconvenience, and sometimes it can be debilitating. It can be life-altering. I've known a handful of people in my lifetime who were blind. I've known a number of people who were legally blind, and now that I'm getting older, I'm getting blinder by the day. It seems like every year it's like, well, I got to think about getting another pair of glasses. Blindness is nothing. Again, it's something that can be terribly inconvenient. However physical blindness may be, whatever form it takes and however inconvenient or difficult it may be, there's a version of blindness that is far worse, and that's spiritual blindness. In Isaiah 6, when Isaiah was commissioned by God to go out and preach, he was told something. And I have to say that if most preachers heard this when they first started preaching, many of us would never start to begin with. And in verse 8 of Isaiah 6, I heard the voice of the Lord saying, "Whom shall I send and who will go for us?" And then I said, "Here I am, send me." And he said, "Go to this people and say, keep on hearing but do not understand, keep on seeing but do not perceive, make the heart of this people dull and their eyes heavy, and blind their eyes, lest they see with their eyes and hear with their ears and understand with their hearts and turn and be healed." And then I said, "How long, O Lord?" And he said, "Until cities lie waste without inhabitant and houses without people, and the land is a desolate waste, and the Lord removes people far away, and the forsaken places are many in the midst of the land. Though a tenth remain in it, it will be burned again like a terebinth or oak whose stump remains when it is felled. The holy seed is its stump." He said, "I want you to go and preach to people who aren't going to listen to you. I want you to go and preach to people who have absolutely no interest in what you have to say, but I want you to preach anyway." And he said, "Well, how long am I supposed to do that?" And he said, "Until I destroy the place." Not a very optimistic outlook on his preaching ministry, but nonetheless, he was told right up front, there are people in this world. He said, I love that phrase, "in seeing, they will not see." It wasn't a physical vision problem. It was a spiritual vision problem. And he said, it's going to be an ugly situation. Jesus used this part of this passage as an explanation about the parables. Why did he preach in parables? Because there was a sense in which some people would see and some people wouldn't. Some people would get what he had to say, other people would not get what he had to say. And he said, "I preach in order to make that distinction clear." Spiritual blindness is a theme in the book of Isaiah. That phrase, "in hearing they will not hear, in seeing they will not see," that phrase and variations on it show up time and time and time again in the book of Isaiah. Isaiah was concerned with spiritual perception. I want us to look at a text tonight. It's one of my favorite texts in the New Testament that deals with the idea of spiritual blindness, John chapter 9. We're told in the opening verses, as he passed by, he saw a man blind from birth, and his disciples asked him, "Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?" Jesus answered, "It was not that this man sinned or his parents, but that the works of God might be displayed in him. We must work the works of him who sent me while it is day. Night is coming when no one can work, and as long as I am in the world, I am the light of the world." Having said these things, he spit on the ground and made mud with the saliva, and then he anointed the man's eyes with the mud and said to him, "Go and wash in the pool of Siloam," which means sent. So he went and washed and came back seeing. Now, this is an almost continuous series of events that actually starts, I think, back in chapter 7. It appears to be connected with the Feast of Booths, which would have been very near the end of Jesus' ministry. We don't know exactly when this took place, but we're told in chapter 7, verse 1, "After this, Jesus went about in Galilee. He would not go about in Judea because the Jews were seeking to kill him. Now the Jews' Feast of Booths was at hand," or Feast of Tabernacles, some translations might say. "So his brother said to him, 'Leave here and go to Judea that your disciples may also see your works that you are doing.'" They were skeptical of him. In fact, they're really kind of making fun of him here. And so it's identified as the Feast of Booths, and eventually he does actually go. Verse 10, "After his brothers had gone up to the feast, then he also went up, not publicly, but in private." And pretty much the rest of this is dealing with that. Verse 14, "In the middle of the feast, Jesus went up into the temple and began teaching." Verse 25, "Some of the people of Jerusalem therefore said, 'Is not this the man whom they seek to kill? And here he is speaking openly, and they're saying nothing to him.'" Verse 32, "The Pharisees heard the crowd muttering these things about him. The chief priests and Pharisees sent officers to arrest him." And then going on into chapter 8, there's a question about the authenticity of chapter 8, verses 1 through 11. Maybe that belongs there, maybe it doesn't. But it looks as if you keep reading through chapter 8 and even into chapter 9, it's just one continuous dialogue between Jesus and the crowd, Jesus and the scribes and Pharisees. And then chapter 9 begins in the same way, "As he passed by." As he passed by what? And it appears that he is still in Jerusalem. It appears that there are crowds and Pharisees and scribes still that Jesus is encountering. So I would argue that chapter 9 is probably just a continuation of what we see back in chapter 7. It's a continuation of a series of events at the Feast of Booths. Now back in chapter 5, Jesus heals a man on the Sabbath. He is challenged by some Jews in both. Jesus appears and then he leaves, and then the healed person is questioned. Similar event, but it's still a different one. So what I want us to do for the bulk of the lesson is just step through chapter 9 and make some observations about this interesting little event. You start out with the description of the miracle, which is what we just read. Jesus passes by and he sees a man blind from birth. So the man is here. I don't know exactly, I don't remember how old he is, but anyway, he's been blind from birth. Everybody knows him. People in this community know him. That actually comes up later. His parents will testify the man's been blind ever since we've known him. He's born blind. And then the disciples ask this question. There's something of a debate. So who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? Now, I think it's interesting that they would even ask the question. They believe in what we would call retributive theology. They believe very simply that if you do good deeds, God rewards you, and he rewards you in the here and now. Yeah, he'll reward you in heaven, but he will reward you in the here and now. And if you do bad, you'll get punished in the here and now. So they assume either he's born in sin or his parents were sinners, and this is the retribution of God. Doesn't that sound an awful lot like the book of Job? They just assume that because Job is suffering badly, he must have done something awful. And I think there's a lot of people in the Bible that very much viewed that. I hear some people today talk that way. Something calamitous happens, and we just assume that, well, boy, they must have done something really bad. But Jesus says, neither. And by the way, I think we've kind of gotten to an almost opposite extreme. If something bad happens to someone, we just assume, well, of course God doesn't punish people that way. God certainly can. I don't know that he does. He doesn't reveal that to us today the way that he did back in biblical times, but Jesus just says neither. His answer is, it was not that this man sinned or his parents, but that the works of God might be displayed in him. That works of God, that's a phrase that shows up a lot in John's gospel. And what it's John's favorite word, or one of John's favorite words for describing miracles. I think what Jesus is saying was, it was a purely random thing, but I'm going to use it to heal the man and glorify God. So regardless of the origin of this problem, he says, I'm going to use this in a way that this will bring glory to God. And he says, we need to work the works of him, verse 4, who sent me while it is day, night is coming when no one can work. As long as I'm in the world, I'm the light of the world. Now, this is the second time he said that. You go back to chapter 7, verse 12. I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will not walk in darkness, but will have the light of life. Jesus